Can I issue a warning?
Yes, please.
Yeah.
I'm in a bad mood.
Okay.
Oh.
Because I have the, in my case, let's say early middle-aged, or maybe I'm young still.
Yeah,
am I young?
You're young.
Yeah. Look at your complexion.
I have the young man's friend.
Mm-hmm.
Back pain.
Oh. Plague of the young man.
It's such a young person issue, isn't it?
Young man's lumbago.
Young man's lumbago.
You know what they say? Perfect posture, constant burning pain. That's what they say, isn't it?
That's what the young... And he, honestly, I mean, I hardly ever do it these days, but if you do listen to any of the young music that's played, it's almost... It's all about back pain, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's right.
Whereas once you get to the sort of Paul Weller phase of your career, it's all kind of calloused up and fossilised, so it can't experience any pain anymore at all.
No.
It's just fully stiff.
It's fully stiff.
Nor can it move in any way.
No, but it's a lot more comfortable.
So my back pain this week is... I'm blaming on... Putin's illegal war in Ukraine because
have you been targeted by drones in the lower lumbar region?
At the moment, it feels like I'd love that, actually. Okay, it might help, you know, just a quick barrage of artillery fire at my lower back might help
free things up a bit.
It's a classic cost of living crisis story, really, which is that, as I mentioned on the podcast before, my shower broke. This is months ago, but I haven't got around to fixing it. Or having anyone else fix it.
You thought your autumn rinse would see you through to the new year.
So it's rinse in the autumn, it's soap in the winter, isn't it? It's alternate seasons.
Yeah.
So you soap it up in the summer, you rinse it off
in
the spring.
And then the spring exfoliation is a sight to behold.
The spring sloughing.
The spring sloughing is incredible. And waving goodbye, isn't it, to all those, not just the usual microorganisms, but also some fairly sort of medium-sized mammals, isn't it, they're living.
Some megafauna, yeah.
Yeah.
Some serious megafauna.
And some friends you realise that you haven't seen in a while and wonder where they were.
They've actually been
books you haven't finished, all kinds of stuff.
They've actually been buried under some sort of some scabbing, some flesh scabbing.
Well, you're mischaracterizing my level of hygiene because, as I said, I think way back when, I've been having a bath every day, like an aristocrat. But I started thinking maybe these baths are costing quite a lot of money because of the cost of gas. Thank you, Putin.
Yeah.
That's the thing. So I thought I'll have like a small bath. Yeah. I won't fill it up too much, is what I was thinking.
Just get in the frying pan.
So
basically, there was a kind of couple of inches of water in the bottom of the bath. But what I've come to realise is you have to have a certain amount in to create a level of buoyancy. There was no buoyancy at all.
So you weren't, so were you then trapped under the meniscus? Because this is the people talk about drowning in 2 inches of water, don't they?
That's how you do.
If there's not enough to float you above it, you end up just trapped just underneath it, like sort of cling film, just a very thin layer of water over it, holding you down.
To prevent that, you have to just pour a copious amounts of salt into it so you float on the top.
That's right. You have to make it super saline, don't you? It's the only...
Like the Dead Sea. That's the only safe way of doing it.
The old Dead Sea solution.
Mm. Well, that's the problem. I didn't make it saline enough. I did open a whole multi-pack of salt and vinegar crisps into it, but
it's too late at that point.
It wasn't enough. And so, there was no buoyancy within the bath. So actually, what I've realised is all of my considerable heft was sort of just concentrated on the small of my back, which was kind of... Because, you know, I've got the posture of a kind of prawn. Like, it's kind of, you know, like a slightly fetal position.
A king prawn, be fair to yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But you've also... you've ever had it mentioned, but you also have the dead eyes of a prawn. So the two in combination is quite uncanny, isn't it?
And the abdominal legs.
Well, that's what I'm coming on to, Mike, because they started spraying everywhere.
And also, you cook incredibly quickly, don't you? You're always surprising how quick a prawn cooks. Just a sort of if you just have a warm shower, or just walk out on a mild day, you'll end up cooking within seconds.
I know, and just chuck a bit of... It's so simple. A bit of chilli flakes and a bit of garlic.
You've actually...
You know, you don't have to do much.
You don't have to do much. It's delightfully simple. And
soupçon of lime.
Soupçon of lime, and you've got either, well, what I would call a convenient midweek dinner, and what someone like Mike would call a special occasion for all friends and family and work colleagues.
The single prawn. I can have my prawn carving
birthdays, not Christmas.
Christmas prawn.
Just gather around and admire the prawn. It's mainly like visiting, Lenin's body. You process around it, don't you? You can't really touch it.
No, it's aesthetic.
You pay your respects. You pay your respects.
But we're recording this episode pre-Christmas, but we'll be going out after Christmas. So just for sheer... transparency, this is currently the 20th of December. Mike, have you yet bought your Christmas prawn, or is it you're hoping to knock some money off, get one the day before?
You have to order the Christmas prawn months in advance.
Oh, really?
Because yeah, it's a long old journey for the trawlerman to go out.
Just to get the one.
The deepest Baltic and get the mega prawn, if they can, which is almost 4 inches long.
That's right. And it's also, it's incredibly hard to catch, because you picture a trawlerman's net.
Mm.
Just giving you time. Are you picturing it?
Got it.
Yeah. Yep. Ben?
I'm having a bit of trouble, actually, but I think so, yeah.
Coarse, wide bore.
It's got some tails to tell. I tell you what, if nets could speak, this one would have some tails. Ben, picture a football assistant coach's net full of balls.
Okay, yeah.
But just imagine it's much, much bigger, more kelpie. It's got more sea damage to the weft, obviously. Unless it's a footballer on a football coach who's based on an oil rig.
A football coach turned fisherman.
10, which is worse than Hunter 10 gamekeep. I've lost. I don't know what's going on.
We're talking about the catching of my Christmas prawn.
Yeah, it's very hard to catch one prawn in a net. Picture a net.
Yeah, well, it's a very wasteful process.
It's such a wasteful process.
Because they try and pick out the right one. So they catch on average about 13,000 prawns before they find the prawn. They're sending me pictures on WhatsApp every day for 3 months.
Yeah, yeah. You've been dinging, haven't you, for the last month? Yeah,
oh,
constant
yeah.
dinging. Yeah,
it's relentless.
How do you think this one will carve?
Yeah.
How much stuffing do you think this one will take?
Are this one's eyes dead enough? Too dead.
Imagine a prawn with really expressive eyes. Ooh. Absolutely horrible.
Well, the eyes of a dog, which are the eyes of a human. Because a dog, as we've discussed before, looks like a human trapped in a dog. Doesn't it? Because it's got exact human eyes. So then you'd be looking
at... And a human looks like a human that's escaped from a dog.
And got into a monkey.
Climbed into a shaved monkey and put clothes on, yeah. I've been told before quite a few times, neither of you have ever mentioned this, which is nice, but I've actually been told that I've got the dead eyes of a shark.
Who by?
Several people.
By a GP?
A GP used to be a football coach, he used to be a fisherman, yeah.
You don't have the dead eyes of a shark.
I do actually. They're quite, when you start looking at them.
No, they're dark, they're quite, I think.
They're dark.
They're bovine.
I don't think they're... Oh,
they're not,
thanks, Mike. Stop it.
Not,
you're being too...
They're not predatory.
You've got the empathetic eyes of a cow, is what Mike's saying.
Yeah.
Rather than the assassin's eyes of a prawn.
The easily foxed, dull, glossy eyes of a grass-eating ungulate.
Well, it's a classic parlour game or sort of Christmas time chat, isn't it? With the family, grannies, grandparents, distant family, get together and you discuss what would it be like if you did swap the eyes of some of the main animals. What would they be like, isn't it? So we've all played that, haven't we, on Boxing Day? Imagine a cow with a prawn's eyes, for example.
An owl with the compound eyes of a spider. That's busy, isn't it?
Oh, that is busy.
Busy, busy bee. But no, obviously we could talk about that all day.
What about a Chancellor of the Exchequer with the eyes of a fly?
Ooh.
Well, I'll tell you what, that'd make a nice change from them having the...
He's going to get there. He's working for it.
I mean, nice change from the usual Chancellor, who just normally has the doesn't have so much the eyes of a fly as the
he's got it.
The
he's
attitude
got it.
To
he's got
Lord, fiscal out to his, sitting on a, rubbing their hands as if about to, not standing on a turd,
being sick on shit,
not being able to get out of a window properly. I don't know.
Hey,
kapow! Oh,
not so much the eyes of a fly, but the snout of a pig in the trough. That was there for you, Henry.
I should have done that. I tell you what, be a nice change to have a chancellor that does eat dog shit for a while, rather than eating the hopes of this country in the future. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, I think so. Yeah. Rubber stamp that. Send it to number 10.
I think good to go.
Chew on that.
Other satire podcasts are available.
Now, Ben, you know your bath story.
Mm. It's not a story. It's my life.
your sore but clean back.
Mm. Yes.
So what struck me about it is something I just swore to myself I wouldn't talk about on this podcast, which is something I've actually had to do a few weeks ago.
Oh my god!
And I feel in general that I often lower the, I sort of, it's me that I feel like I'm often the source of quite lewd or.
Henry, do you need me to ready the digestive tract jingle?
Ben,
it does feel like that's coming. Doesn't
don't
it?
Pretend you don't. You don't. You don't. You have your finger hovering over that whenever I open my mouth. but basically, what you've created there, maybe unbeknownst to yourself, is a sitz bath.
Ah, yes, the old sitz bath. Now, I think we have actually mentioned the sitz bath before on this podcast.
I've mentioned the sitz bath, but I don't think I still don't think I really know what it is.
So, sitz
is it just
bath?
You sit down in a bath for like very frail people?
No, there isn't really a name for that, but that would be a sit bath, I think.
Right.
This is a sitz bath, S-I-T-Z.
Named after Dr. Sitz.
Named after Dr. Sitz. It's a German, it is a German idea, I think.
Digestive tract talk. Oh, yeah.
And basically. I don't know if I want to talk. Maybe I shouldn't talk about this.
Are you about to get into deep arse cleansing?
It's not about cleansing. It's about
it's a soothing thing.
It's
isn't
soothing.
It?
It's about okay. Relief. And basically,
soothe the angry anus.
If you've got an angry bottom, you go in this thing called a sitz bath, where you get in a bath, and it has to be just 2 or 3 inches deep, and something about the pressure points, and it just kind of relieves you.
Yeah. So essentially, what I tried to do, Henry, was lie down and relax in a sitz bath.
Yeah. What you're doing there is you're trying to lie down and relax in sort of traction or something. You know, you're in a medical bath. You're in a medical place. You know what I mean? that's trying to relax while getting defibrillated or something. Do you know what I mean?
There's one relaxation point, which is your ass.
Yeah, exactly. So your arse would have relaxed, but you were trying to relax what, your mind or your whole body, your life?
Well, your back and your mind are closely linked, aren't they, when it comes to relaxation? Yeah. So, yeah.
And wash your armpits at the same time.
Yeah, it was a disaster.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear it.
Absolute disaster.
I can say that the sitz bath, I was an absolute convert when I did it. I found it very relaxing, but I quite often had the urge to just fill it up all the way and make it into a bath. But I think if it's a bath, it's not a sitz bath anymore. I'm not sure if it works in terms of...
Your ass knows that you're not doing it especially for the ass. That's the problem.
Exactly. It feels left out because it's...
Yeah.
And it's been very much front and centre, hasn't it, of the show up until that point.
And this show.
Which is why you're in that bath in the first place.
Yeah. And the ass does have the personality of a spoilt 13-year-old American high school girl. Doesn't it? That's known. I mean, that's medically known, isn't it?
That's what those archetypes in American dramas are based on, in fact, aren't they?
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. But I tell you what, when I was sitting in the sitz bath, I did have a moment where I thought, I'm super relaxed here. Partly it's because I'm actually taking some time for me and my ass. But I think that was part of it. If you carve that time aside for yourself, you feel quite special. There's something about the ceremony of stopping putting the hot water in after 3 inches. There's a bit of ceremony to that. Do you know what I mean? You turn the taps off.
Yeah.
3 inches have been reached. You lower the sitz flag to half mast, which you get sent. You get a pack with a picture of Dr. Sitz's ass on it. You lower that to half mast.
You've warmed the arse towel in readiness.
The arse towel is ready.
Is it meant to be freezing cold, the sitz bath?
No.
Or boiling hot?
No, I tell you...
It's one or the other, though, isn't it, I think?
God, I tried to think, what are you putting your arse through, Ben? It's not it's not about extremes. It's about
the healing powers of tepid water.
Yeah, it's about lukewarm. I suppose you could say if this podcast was a medical
procedure.
It would be the sitz bath.
Were the anal cleansing baths of podcasts.
Yeah.
Sitz bath for your ears.
It is a sitz bath for your ears because when I was sitting in there, I felt ultra calm. I felt really relaxed. I started seeing things a bit more clearly. And I thought, I just felt if people could get together in this state while having sitz baths.
If the UN General Assembly could be adapted to a series of 190-odd sitz baths.
If people could just sit down with each other and talk. Because
come, sits with me.
and maybe
we are hearing that the two sides of the conflict are finally sitting down with one another. And we hope for resolution by the morning.
And again, there could be ceremony, for example, one political leader could actually, and as a gesture of goodwill, Dr. Moritz. I'm trying to invent political leaders so we don't want to talk about any particular current political issue, do we? Dr. Yeah. Moritz.
So who's Dr. Moritz?
Is he the Prussian viceroy?
The Prussian viceroy, Dr. Moritz, has actually filled up the sitz bath and is measuring the 3 inches of tepid water on behalf of...
the Austrian prince.
Exactly, yeah. Doing it for each other, and there could be all kinds of ceremony attached to the flags and setting the temperature.
He's pouring cloves in.
Oh, yeah.
Adding some cloves if it's a Christmassy meeting, if it's a Christmassy conflict that needs resolving.
Are there aromas and flavours involved in the sitz experience?
Well, I think there can be. I think you can start adding to it, probably. But I think when you're in that state, which is naked as the day you were born, but also in that 3 inches of tepid, so it has to be tepid water, and essentially your bottom, you're the 13-year-old, very, very, very spoilt American high school girl that we all... sit.
I don't like this thing of comparing your ass to a 13-year-old girl. There's something about it that just feels a bit off.
Okay, A.
There's nothing wrong with it, actually, when you think about it. It just feels wrong, doesn't it?
Okay, a 45-year-old spoiled
British man.
Spoiled British man.
Spoiled high school student.
A 45-year-old British high school student. That doesn't feel right either. What's he doing over there?
Held back for over 25 years.
Well, it's a lovely idea. It's a lovely idea.
But then, of course, you know, the way things are, it's like you think, oh, I'm going to start meditation. I'm going to start yoga. I'm going to... Yeah, the fact is, I've actually stopped doing the sitz bath and I don't take the time for it. So...
Ah, Henry.
Yeah.
Do you know what I like from my bath at the moment is that I tend to have a bath about the same time every day. It's a bit late. Mm-hmm. It's normally post-midnight.
Ooh. Oh, so at night... Okay, yeah, before bed.
I have a sort of night bath.
Night bath.
And I'll turn on the radio, and it'll be after which time Radio 4 is turned over to the World Service. Hopefully I've got in after the fucking... What's it called?
The shipping forecast.
The bloody shipping forecast. Yeah. I just want to have a bath, not think about...
Oi, fishermen. Oi, chill out. You're just angry because you're on Mike's tide reading show hasn't taken off. So don't pretend it's not about anything other than that, Ben.
Anyway, what I tend to listen to now, because of the time... is the BBC World Service's Business Matters.
Ooh.
World Business News.
You get fresh insights to the Guatemalan Quetzal.
It's really good. I feel plugged into the world of international finance in a way I never have before. Oh. Singapore.
This is huge.
Mumbai. Washington. They sort of go everywhere. It's amazing.
I like that stuff. You get that stuff when you're on holiday and there's BBC World News in the hotel room. There'll be a lot of international business briefings type. Is that what that show's called?
It's called Business Matters is the one I'm listening to. So that's my kind of bath, which is, you know, hard business news.
Yeah.
Henry's the 2 inches of tepid arse water.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Mike, I'm imagining when Mike does a bath, you're talking candles, you're talking dark chocolate.
Did you say I thought you said handles. I thought he's all that old. He's got a picture like using a handle to get in, then holding himself up with handles. Just handles on every...
I'm imagining handles. I'm imagining a team of nurses. I hoist
some of those mini piranhas to nibble off the calluses.
And the whole thing is done by drip, so it's an internal bath. The bath itself is dry. It's just
It wouldn't be safe to do it externally.
There's just one bag in the air and then another bag at the bottom. It's a flow through. It flows through once. You can still...
It's technically an irrigation rather than a bath.
You can stick in one of those bath bombs, but that plays havoc with every single organ in your body does it on the way down.
Yeah, I'm all sixes and sevens if you bath bomb me.
Yeah.
For hours afterwards. It takes a lot to calm me down.
But the fact is, it's a convenient Christmas present to ask people to get you, so you will acquire them and you will use them.
I will have a go. It's too much to resist.
Yeah.
No, Henry, I said candles. I was imagining a sort of... just Mike taking some time for himself. Yeah. You know, candles, chocolates...
Yeah.
Mariah Carey on the CD player.
Yeah.
You know, he's chilling out. Well, he deserves it.
Yeah.
Benjamin, you know me well. You're describing my ideal bath. Unfortunately, our bath at home is a bit short.
Is it?
It's just not quite long enough to fit me in properly. So I end up having to sort of fill it quite deep. And there's quite a lot of...
Do you have to go vertical?
It's basically, there's a lot of agility is involved.
And it's deeper than it is long.
Bath-based... aquarobics, and it's obscene. Spectacle. And so I very rarely do it. It's exhausting and it's obscene.
It would be such a challenge, wouldn't it? In fact, they isn't it not true that they use it to train people that, you know, that do the digitizing, the pixelating? It'd be such a pixelate. Right. It'd be a pixelator's nightmare, wouldn't it?
It's a real challenge. It's unpixelatable. I move fast and rapidly.
He's so fast and rapid. There's so many obscene angles.
The pixels have got to move all over.
And this thing's being reflected off.
And you can never pass that exam. People do that exam. They technically failed. Yeah. But if they've even managed to pixel, you know, one frame, then actually, no one passes it. You're okay.
It's Fermat's theorem. I mean, it's one of his theorems, isn't it?
Fermat's last bath.
It's an unsolvable. Yeah.
Also, some things that are still disgusting through pixels.
That's true.
That's right.
You'd have to make the pixel so big it would be one big square of flesh, of mite-coloured flesh, and you'd still be disgusting.
One big pink square. And even then, you still need to put a foot through the television. Otherwise, it's just too powerfully emetic.
You'd never forget that. Every time you blink, you'd see that big pink square for the rest of your life.
People have tried to pixelate me live as well, I'm having to spend my Saturdays at the moment in a sort of pixelation lab.
By holding semi-transparent different gradations of pink Perspex cubes in front of you?
That's right.
that's tough.
That's what they're doing at the moment, but it's manpower heavy.
It really is.
And I'm assuming, Mike, as well, more than 50% of the time, once you get in, Pam's jumping in there an active dog in the situation.
Yeah, she thinks I'm drowning, and she comes. I'm covered in scratches. There's a lot of blood in the water early doors.
Yeah.
Mix them with the bubbles. And they come out quite nice and frothy and pink initially, and then it really turns murky, and it's ugly stuff.
Pam. 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 Pam.
Good girl, Pam. Good girl, Pam. Oh, Pam. Pam, Pam. Pam, Pam. Pam, Pam. No, no, Pam, Pam, Pam.
Okay, time to turn on the bean machine. This week's topic, as sent in by Lindsay.
Thank you, Lindsay.
Thanks, Lindsay.
From the North Sea coast town of Bremen, is crisps.
Oh, come off it, mate.
You don't want to do crisps?
No, I'm up for crisps, yeah.
Now, I think early doors, I'm aware we have some listeners in other parts of the world that don't call crisps crisps. Just need to deal with that early doors.
Yeah.
Get that out of the way. You will refer to them as potato discs, I think. Yeah. What you call them? Fried potato discs. Yeah.
Starch pucks.
Starch pucks.
Crunchy sauces.
Crunchy sauces.
Crunchy sauces. Crispy Charlies. salty fun wedges.
King Edward's diaphragm.
I'm, of course, referring to the fact that Americans in general called them chips, I think.
You did a whole reincarnation episode on crisps. Didn't you? Is this a point for a plug, or do you want to do that later?
Well, but I'm not. I can't do plug. You know, I'm not good at plugs.
Well, I've been. You're very good about it. But he's taken his headphones off and everything. What's happened is I've tried to encourage Henry to do a bit of self promotion, which he's very, very bad at, and he's got hot.
No, that is true.
He's taken off his earphones. he's taken off some of his clothes, and he can't. Maybe I'll do it for you then, Henry. If you can't handle it,
I've also just fragmented. I've just fragmented a piece of a plastic component of something that I found on the floor. I don't know what it is, but I fragmented it. No, I'm fine.
I'm sorry to put you through it, but I'll tell the listeners very quickly, and then you can... Basically, Henry's made a very, very excellent radio sitcom called Reincarnation, which you can listen to on BBC Sounds, and there's a new series that's out and about at the moment.
Yeah, no.
And you haven't plugged it because you're hopeless at self-promotion in any way, shape or form.
That's true. But and it's true that there is an episode that focuses on crisps, and it focuses on the phenomenon of holiday crisps, which is the crisps that you come across on holiday.
Yeah,
paprika.
Which they have flavor types like paprika, which we don't get here in Britain.
Well, you also get there's also the kind of in the similar theme. There's the crisps of the past, which I, you know, like the one I dream of is the one where you had your own little salt packet within the bag, and you had to open your salt packet. What were they called?
Salt and shake.
Well, that's why ready salted is called ready salted, because those ones were not ready salted.
They were not ready.
They were self salting.
What were they called?
Salt and shake.
Salt and shake.
Was it salt and shake? Yeah. And you can
still get them.
Can you? Well, not down our way.
Yeah.
Can you still get salt and shake?
Yeah, for sure. It's the best.
Is that because you can be your decision to choose to pour all the salt in?
Yeah, but I don't pour all the salt
do,
in.
Do you actually not pour
why
it all
that?
In?
Why are you still getting? Is that because Wales is still in the EU? Is that why you can still get?
They're British, Mike, because it's about choice and liberty and your choice whether to salt. Nobody in Brussels is telling you to salt your potatoes. It's your choice. It's within your own sovereignty of your own heart.
And you don't have to fill in a heap of bloody forms, do you? And get the approval of...
of Herman Van Rompuy.
Of Herman Van Rompuy and his corrupt sister, Susan Van Rompuy.
I feel very nervous unless I've got a chip from Susan Van Rompuy telling me that I'm allowed to...
I know what you mean.
Salt crisps or not.
You like to have a chitty, don't you?
I like to have a chitty. I like to know that the admin is there and that I'm supposed to be doing this and I've been... Someone's green-lit it.
You're one of the only people I know, Mike, that still uses the additional pink receipt underneath everything you do. There's a pink receipt underneath it, which you...
Oh,
isn't it?
Yeah, and if I can get triplicate, if there's a green one under that, then I'm happy boy.
Because, of course, you've got to send one of everything to Susan Van Rompuy. So
that's right. Everything has to get...
You need three.
And yes, she's asked me to stop, but I feel like I've got a sense of direction.
Exactly. And that's why it's CCing someone, isn't it? That stands because it's Susan Van...
Because she spells Susan with a C, yeah.
The Susan copy.
And she spells Van Rompuy with a C as well.
Exactly. And good luck getting her to change that spelling because you're going to have to wade through a heap of bureaucratic forms that have actually been designed by Susan Van Rompuy to actually even address that issue. So dream on.
I went on a holiday recently to Germany and when we got to the airport, we had to go through, where was it? I guess it was when we landed. Hmm. We had to go through passport control. Yeah. And the new reality now, if you're British, is obviously you don't get to go in the EU queue.
That's true. It's so annoying.
You have to go in the rest of the world queue.
You have to crawl through the Anglo tube, don't you?
That's right. The Anglo tube of shame.
Yeah.
Which it's impossible to not come out of naked. It's so tight, isn't it? That as you come out of it, you emerge like a worm, as naked as a worm.
And you're being huffed by Dutchmen on the way out as well. They're legally allowed to huff you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
On your way out.
Oh, yeah.
And then you just have to scurry straight into the sewers and hope you can make it to your hotel through the undercity, isn't it?
It's humiliating, but it's fair.
Anyway, because the flight was from Britain, most people on the flight were British. And so there was a massive queue on the rest of the world bit, and it was taking ages to get through. The airport staff were getting a bit annoyed, and they were just shouting out, does anyone have an EU passport? And then my partner said, oh, we used to, or something like that, because she was annoyed.
Yeah.
And she was annoyed at this stupid system we now have.
This feels like this could be the equivalent of the, the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand story. It all just started. There were two holidaymakers. They were in a queue in Berlin airport. The staff started saying, has anyone got an EU passport? And then a famous podcaster's partner... that we used to, and then and the domino effects of that
was the spark and the powder keg
are still being felt, and that's why I'm narrating this to you, this whole story to you
from a bunker 7 miles underground beneath the ice.
And why you're not actually a person, you're just a photograph of Susan Van Rompuy. You're all I've got left in this world.
You're stored in a Dropbox server somewhere.
Because as soon as World War III started, Susan Van Rompuy initiated the Van Rompuy protocol.
She holographed herself.
She holographed herself.
She paid for the business Dropbox. 10 gigabytes.
Which most people hadn't got around to doing. So she was one step ahead of the game.
Exactly. If you haven't done that, you're
in trouble.
You can't get into the free Dropbox.
And from then on, any email, any fax, any text, everything, it's just a picture of Susan Van Rompuy's face. And
a fictional woman that we've created.
Exactly. See herself as, frozen herself and fired herself into low orbit.
Yeah.
She's waiting.
She's waiting for the Van Rompuy era, which is what she's hoping this will win.
Anyway, you're kind of right, Henry, because my girlfriend's saying this. It sort of released a lot of pent-up frustration from everyone around us, who also was annoyed that we no longer have an EU passport. So there's quite a lot of...
Was it like, okay, we need to plan an insurrection right now. All we've got is loads and loads of less than 100 millimetres of different liquids. But if we put them all together
and nothing sharp, specifically nothing is sharp,
we're literally the worst possible position to improvise an interaction from. Although if we were
some people have also taken off their shoes, although they don't really need to.
They still think you have to.
And everyone's got their belt off, so everyone's trousers are moments from falling down.
All we've got is 50 or so quite large softback
Grishams.
We've got a lot of Grishams. That's what we've got.
But we have all had breakfast 3 times in the last 12 hours.
So we're pumped.
A lot of us have been drinking 5 a.m. pints, so we're quite sort of...
Yeah.
We're quite up for it.
And I've just watched 3/4 of the Lego movie. Ben, I did something I've been wanting to mention to you, actually, Ben, is that you did go on holiday to Berlin recently.
I did.
And around about the same time...
There was like an insurrection there.
There was an insurrection...
There was, yeah.
Where some German people tried to put an aristocrat...
A prince.
Prince claiming ancient... Mm. Royal blood, yeah. European royal blood.
Prince Benjamin, I think.
Prince Benjamin.
Do you remember from there?
I just thought it felt like a little bit too much of a coincidence, potentially. A, you were in Berlin, and B, as we've discussed before on the podcast, you have the exact demeanour, body, manners, mm-hmm. Tone of voice, everything.
Of someone from the Hohenzollern dynasty.
of the oldest Central European houses.
Exactly. That's what you have. You have old... European aristocrat vibes,
yeah,
big time. And so just wondering if you've got anything to say about that.
What I would say is, like, I don't like to dwell on things that didn't come off,
yeah,
quite as I wanted them to. So, you know, I look forward to my next trip to Germany. Maybe we'll try somewhere less sort of heavily securitized than Berlin.
I think it's great that you've got a easy come, easy go attitude to coups, given your proclivity to coups.
Yeah,
it would be very stressful. For you, if you're worried about outcomes.
Please, Mike, give it its proper name. It was a putsch. It was attempted.
I beg your pardon.
Yeah. Ben doesn't meddle around with anything as vulgar as a coup.
He goes for the full putsch every time.
He's ancient European aristocracy. His putsch is all the way.
It was a bit weird, that, because they basically just, turned up with some guy who was, like, very, very tenuously linked to the royal family. Mm. Like, I don't think he was... Mm. It wasn't Prince Harry level, was it? It was more like Princess Michael of Kent level.
All stand for the king!
We're entering the regal zone. Regal zone. Regal zone.
Off with their heads!
On with the show.
Listen not to the whores and the shopkeepers.
Bring me more advisors.
The regal zone.
No, his relatives 100 years ago were themselves quite tenuously linked to the royal house.
Yeah.
Whereas now, I think to still call himself prince is bold as brass, I think, in the Federal Republic.
Whereas, of course, if he was actually linked to one of those ancient European houses, then, of course, he would have rightfully taken his throne. Is that what you're implying?
Well, God would have, God would have put his hand on the...
Well, God would have created, as is foretold, a golden staircase. Would have led him wherever he wanted it to go. But a shiny gold staircase would have emerged in front of him. It would
up or down.
Could go both up and down. Obviously,
Could go to a mezzanine if he wants it.
Escalator technology has now overtaken some of the ancient aristocratic God-given rights. Essentially, it's an escalator by any other name, but it's gold, so it's quite hard to manoeuvre.
Is that how you take the crown of Germany? Then you just have to go up to the mezzanine. That's where it is.
Yeah,
that's why people keep missing out each time they go too high or too low.
It's on the mezzanine level.
A lot of people don't realise that Germany has a mezzanine level, because when you're there, you don't see it.
It does.
There is actually a whole other level you totally miss.
Yeah, yeah. So you pop up at the mezzanine level, which means you can reclaim the crown
of the Holy Roman Empire.
And at the same time, you can also pick up any shopping you need and have a lovely lunch with some friends.
It's got a kind of food court, isn't it?
Well, of course, it's a mezzanine, Ben. It's got a food court. Yeah, so it's got a food court. You can have some churros.
Get some new sneakers while you're there as well.
You could buy some crisps.
Yeah. But the music is just really, really loud Wagner all the time.
Yeah, that wasn't me. I just want to make it clear that wasn't me.
That wasn't you?
No.
And the fact that you're having to deny it. Mike and I aren't having to deny it. But the fact that you're having to deny it also doesn't mean that it shouldn't make people think that maybe it was you.
Well, that's the traditional thing. I mean, normally you can neither confirm nor deny, but when you do deny,
it's
actually...
Yeah, normally it's a sign that...
tacit acknowledgement.
And obviously if it was you, which I think we can, between the lines, it was.
Right,
We're talking to our listeners here, but if it was you, you would deny it. You did deny it there. So again, that's more evidence in the it was you column, isn't it? And the fact that you're being quiet and you're...
And the fact you're broadcasting from a cell in Cologne as well, I think is...
Yeah.
That's the thing about the German prison system. They've got great Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Oh, it's lovely here. It really is.
And also the fact that you're still wearing your plumed emperor's helmet. A little bit of a giveaway, isn't it?
I'm a prisoner of war, Henry. They have to let me wear my uniform. That's part of the Geneva Convention.
You're in prison on horseback?
Sure.
It's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But you've got a status to maintain.
So crisps. Did you have any crisps while you were out there, Ben?
Hey, there we go. Lovely segue.
Very good, Henry. Unfortunately, I think the answer is unfortunately no. I don't think so. I don't know how big crisps are in Germany, to be honest.
Well, look, the elephant in the room here is international crisps and British crisps. I think you can separate crisps into two categories. They're either British or it's Britain and rest of world, is how I see it.
Yeah.
Do you not think America, though, has its own thing?
It has a chips culture. It's not a crisps culture.
Okay.
As far as I know.
Are we talking about... Sorry, I know just before we get into this, we need to do some... we need to look at our definitions here. Are we talking exclusively about potato crisps, or are we talking about snacks in general? For example, a maize-based snack I would still call a crisp, i.e. a skip.
Oh, that's a maize-based thing,
isn't it? Yeah. There's no potato in
a starch. Yeah, skips, snack. Quavers...
I see those Twiglets. Guys. Okay, what's a Cheeto? Is a Cheeto?
Yeah, that's those? A maize, American maize snack. Yeah. Mm. So are we including those today?
I think so, yeah.
I think so.
I reckon.
I think that's fair.
So I think it's anything which comes in, it's that size of packet. We're in the 50 to 75p price range.
You can also get a grab bag.
You can get a grab bag. I'm not stopping you.
Or a multi-pack.
Anything which can be multi-packed. I mean, it's a bit like, you know, the way that they define the genus of different species. It's a bit like, you know, the Victorians got into this, didn't they? You know, categorizing all the species and stuff, and they came up with these charts, which is, has it got flippers? has it got antlers?
Did it bite Darwin?
Has it got an attitude problem? It's got all these different categories.
Has it been baptized?
you tick it all off, and then you, at the bottom it goes, okay.
Can you turn its legs into an umbrella stand?
Yeah. But that's how they categorize the animals.
And then you measure how many umbrellas it can hold.
Yeah.
And are they adult umbrellas? Kids. Are they retractable umbrellas? Yeah. And then, you're getting close.
But they did that in order to, to work out that, because evolution is basically a very, very long, complicated family tree. Yeah, where you've got
they did that because they knew that one day they'd have to categorize crisps and they needed to warm up with something else that was available.
They needed to warm up on something less important.
So are crisps also working towards final crab?
Oh, what is the final?
What's the final evolution of crisps?
Which in crisp would be crab flavor, which I don't believe I've ever come across, in fact.
I've never come across a crab flavor.
No, it's quite a lot of prawn cocktail, which is kind of edging towards it.
So what I would say is, in the same way that, for example, a narwhal.
Yeah, but you're going for the Middle English pronunciation.
You know a narwhal?
Chaucer's narwhal.
That's how you learn about the narwhal, isn't it? You read about it in a...
You know the thing...
In Chaucer.
The thing, exactly. The narwhal's tale. Where he ends up being used to store a lot of paperwork. Shove papers down on his beak.
Yeah, because the knight was doing his tax return at the time. He was trying to get that done on the way.
Yeah, obviously roofs hadn't been invented, so it was very windy. Paperwork was all over the place.
Stick it on a narwhal.
Cute. And then a bawdy narwhal was passing
through. A bawdy narwhal come along the road, indicates. Me speak upon the press me tax return with VAT. Worst. Want to be done.
I didn't know you spoke fluent Middle English, Mike. That's incredible.
Bloody hell, mate. Kept that quiet.
Yeah.
A narwhal. So, according to the Victorian taxonomy systems, you'd go, has it got a beak? Sort of. Has it got eyes? Give or take, yeah. I mean,
is it two eyes or two plus eyes? Yeah, or is it too many eyes?
Those are the three categories. It's give or take.
Is it slippery? Slippery when wet? Slippery when dry? Basically, you can go through the taxonomy system, but look, at the end of the day, Charles, put the skull down. Get off that tortoise. Look me in the eyes. At the end of the day, you just know when it's a narwhal, don't you? I mean, come on. It's fucking obvious. Look at it. Do you know what I mean?
So you're saying a crisp's a crisp because it's just a crisp.
This is instinct.
Exactly. Like a bag of quavers, it's crisps. Look, we can spend hours talking about maize content, starch percentages. At the end of the day, when it's crisps. It's in a small bag. It's available in a petrol station. You could put it in a bowl and get it out at a New Year's Eve party.
But I think
that's why it's one of those AI tests, isn't it? Is this a bag of crisps or a narwhal?
And they yeah. still can't get it right. They still don't get it right every time, Mike. And thank goodness for that.
Until they do, we're okay. But as soon as they can tell the difference between a narwhal and a baby crisp,
it's over. Yeah.
Big doo-doo. Yeah.
Just pray you've got some hatches because you're going to need to be bat on England down, mate. Yeah. And I've already bought some hatches in advance.
You carry a bag of hatches around with you wherever you go these days, don't you?
Wherever I go. And I can bat on. I didn't even need a baton to bat on. I can bat on just...
Self-batoning hatches.
You've got self-battening hatches, yeah.
I've got self-battening.
But Henry, I think... Sorry to pull on this thread, but I think there are some... they might be called edge cases. Is that what they call them?
Don't know.
Well, things where...
Depends what you're on about.
You're saying you know what a crisp is a crisp because it's in a bag and you sell it in a petrol station. You can bring it out on New Year's Eve. I will introduce you to our old friend, the Schneider's
charcoal
pretzel piece.
Whoa. I thought you were going to talk about a bag of charcoal then, baby.
Or a bag of charcoal is a very good example as well.
Or a bag of charcoal, which is quite similar. You're right, the pretzel piece, the trouble with that, the thing with the pretzel piece is...
It's a bagged snack.
The reason it's tricky, a bit like...
hang on, is it the genus of the salted snack? But beyond that is the family of...
Of the
crisp.
Exactly.
And all the family of the band American Snack.
You see, because I think... The pretzel piece bags, it's a bit like, for example, if there was an underwater bat or something.
It's a great jumping off point. Let's see where it goes.
No. You know what it's like is you know duck-billed platypuses or whatever.
Oh yeah,
they don't really obey the rule. They're like they confound.
Yeah, the creature formerly known as the underwater bat.
Exactly. They confound. You know. Victorian men.
They don't fit into the taxonomy easily. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think because the thing about the pretzel piece is it is...
If it's a real animal.
That's if it's a real animal.
Oh, yeah. I've never checked if it's real or not.
Or is it a thought animal? Or is it a thought crisp?
It might just be that someone did a wacky drawing, as people do when they're bored.
Especially Australians.
Yeah, if you're doodling on Darwin's ship.
But the pretzel piece is a very, very real snack. And it claims heritage, I think, from several different... families. There's the salted
bag snack.
The salted bag snack family, which would point it in the crisp direction, but it also comes from the pretzel.
The German bakery tradition.
And again, Ben, we're back to you. We're back to German aristocracy.
Exactly.
Aren't we? We're back to ancient Middle European snacks. Where, of course, it was because the safest way to carry a tube of soft German dough was to tie it to something.
Around a horse's flank.
In an aluminium foil bag.
And then obviously it would smash up en route because the roads weren't good. And then you'd end up arriving with effectively a bag of Snyder's of Hanover.
I'm just saying it's not as easy as you're making out. I think there are...
You're right. In the extreme cases, it's not easy, isn't it? I think most of the time you know. But, you know, we spend our whole time talking about pretzels, you know, Snyder's of Hanover or whatever, but you know most cases are quite easy to...
I'm trying to think of an even more hard one to categorize, like the real platypus of the snack world.
Twiglets.
Yeah, I mean,
that's quite a good example.
They're their own category. They're a bit like they're sort of like some of the things you get in Madagascar that just don't exist anywhere else. You know what I mean? They're sort of unprecedented.
Well, like a lemur that can sing. Okay, time to read your emails. And we've had someone send in a version of our email jingle.
Ooh, another one.
Yes, which is very charming, I think. This is from Stephen and Hedwig from Leipzig.
Leipzig.
Which they say is just down the Autobahn from Bremen.
Lovely.
Stephen writes... There I was in the midst of unloading the dishwasher during the episode Mail when I heard the call for Ersatz Bean Jingles. Immediately I dropped what I was doing and raced to the piano to compose a little triple time ditty that renders your email jingle tune as a kind of bright minuet. My wife graciously agreed to sing the lyrics, and while I wouldn't recommend trying to dance to it, I hope it will serve as a way to entertain your listeners on weeks when Ben's original work feels overplayed.
Very nice. Slight sting in the tail at the end, but very, very nice otherwise.
I think that's how I presented it though when I made this proposition in the first place. So
yeah.
He sounds like he might be one of your sort of old mid-European aristocratic sort of
rivals.
Maybe rival. Leipzig having a dishwasher, rushing to a piano, and just casually tossing in words like minuet.
So let's have a listen. This is Stephen and Hedwig
Yes, please.
And their version of the email theme tune.
When you receive an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters who came before. Thanks, Posty, thanks, Posty, thanks. Thanks, Posty, thanks, Posty, thanks. Anything for me today?
Just some old shit.
When you receive an email, this represents progress, like a robot that's shoeing a horse.
That was brilliant.
That was lovely.
Very charming, isn't it?
That was very, very good. Very, very charming. So that was Hedvig and...
Stephen.
Hedvig and Stephen.
Yeah. I think Stephen's on the piano. I think Hedvig is singing.
I love Hedvig's voice. Very, very sort of beautifully fragile. I liked how it had the quality of, you know, when somebody talks quietly and you're drawn in. It was a very fragile, yes. very slight, but very, very... Very relaxed, very, very human.
Are you saying that my original performance does not have that quality?
Well, your original performance now seems very, very blundering, doesn't it? Very, very crude. And Hedvig, I'm thinking. I mean, it's not something I generally do without looking into someone more deeply. But I'm just thinking. I'm thinking whether. Because obviously I can make someone like Hedvig a star. And
and you're going to have to say to Hedvig, look, I'm going to make you a star, but you have to ditch Stephen.
I mean, you've got to lose Stephen. I mean, you've got to cut off dead weight. Even if it doesn't feel dead at the time, retrospectively, it certainly will be dead after you've cut it off. So just get in there first. You've got to, it's a tough, tough business, Hedvig. You know what I mean?
Don't do it, Hedvig. Don't listen to him. Don't listen to the Queen Maker.
It's a tough, tough business. But I think that was really, really lovely.
It was. Wonderful. Thank you so much for sending us that. You. And if you'd like to make a version of any of our jingles, please do send them in to threebeansaladpod@gmail.com.
You know, when you quite often you come across people like Hedvig and Steve, and is in your mind, you just think they just feel like they've got the perfect life to me.
I know. I've got that as
well. Do you
know
what I mean?
In Leipzig, they've got a lovely apartment.
They live near Leipzig.
Lovely piano in the corner.
They've got a dishwasher. Stephen's emptying it.
Yeah, they've done or nearly done the washing of the dishes.
They've nearly done it, or they're in between. Who knows? Mm. But they're, you know, they're always either emptying it or filling it, and they do it together, and they chuck the plates, you know, at each other. Not at each other, but they... you know, they have a thing.
They playfully hurl Pyrex at
playfully
each other.
chuck plates around and they have a little way of doing it. And then at any point, they'll be listening to things on the radio. They'll be listening to, often they'll be listening to waltzes on an old-fashioned gramophone.
Yeah.
And at any point, Stephen will just go, hang on, I'm feeling a ditty coming on, and they'll drop everything.
Often all the dishes they're holding.
Off of the drop the dishes, those will smash up. And they'll run to the piano and he'll sit there and they'll sing a lovely, really human, really fragile piece like that.
Mm. Thank you both. So we've had a lot of emails. It's time, you know, sometimes we need a word for this, really, when we get like 25 bollockings on the same very specific topic.
No.
Yes. Cluster bollock?
It's the cluster omni bollock, I think.
A legion of bollockings.
Well, they are massing at your gates, Mike.
Mm. Oh, no, really?
Really?
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Accessing listener bollocking. Bollocking loading. Bollocking loaded.
You're getting the omni bollocking.
Right.
But we've got an email from a man called Adam who sent us an email called Bollock Roulette.
Oh.
And he goes like this. Mike?
Yeah.
It's the Trivial Pursuit Genus Edition, not Genius Edition.
Is it?
That's true. And can I say, I actually, I thought that at the time, but I wasn't quite confident enough to bring it to say it.
So it's,
but
it's a basic literacy issue.
Basically, we've had 25 emails saying it's genus, yeah. And genus just means genus. It's the normal version,
yeah.
As opposed to the family version or some other version.
Oh.
It's a common mistake.
And that basically you are not a genius, Mike, because...
Clearly. Because I can't read a basic word.
It's true, Mike. This is a mistake that's been made for a long time. I wasn't completely confident because I wondered if a Genius Edition had come out since or something that was different. And it's partly to do with the way it's written and the sort of font. And if you have a fairly lumbering, quite simplistic... sort of
sausage brain.
I'm not going to say myopic, but
So is that accepted, Mike?
Oh, completely accepted. And apologies to the surprisingly large number of people who have been irritated by that.
Bollocking accepted.
Okay, so continuing Adam's original email, bollock roulette.
Yeah. Okay.
So Mike, you had that one. Ben, your opinions about Wallace and Gromit are factually incorrect.
Oh.
The Wrong Trousers is an undeniable Hitchcockian masterpiece. Bollock not accepted.
Reflecto bollock.
Yeah, you're never going to get Ben to accept that.
Ben can't reverse an.
You're hiding to nothing there. You can't. It's crazy to take on a naysayer with their naysaying. You're actually, that's what they want. You know,
you've strengthened me, Adam.
Exactly.
I'm stronger than ever before.
It is whatever the hell grist is to whatever the hell a mill that deals with grist would do with it. You know what I mean? For Ben, isn't it? It is.
Yeah.
And then Adam finishes the bollocking roulette with Henry. Well done. You have survived bollock roulette.
Mm. Well, but the trouble with that is that's how you become addicted to bollock roulette, because you win it once.
Final email. So this is about the naysaying we talked about. Mm. And I did wonder, actually, if there might be room for a little sort of format point of just people's naysays.
I think that's a great idea.
Right. Yeah, brilliant.
This is from Ruby. This is not a bollocking, but it could have been. Take this as a warning bollock of the highest degree. Ooh. In your most recent episode, Board Games, Henry suggests that it would feel good to taste the brew of naysaying the Paddington films. Mm. She says, this is a grave misjudgment. Although it may feel good initially, the costs will severely outweigh the rewards.
Mm.
As I'm sure you're aware of the tsunami of backlash you would receive, and I don't think you've quite understood that it would lead to a swift end to the podcast and your entire reputation.
Yeah.
May I draw your attention to the case of Eddie Harrison?
Oh.
Harrison made the error of leaving Paddington 2 a 2-star review in 2021, therefore causing the film to no longer be the highest rated film of all time.
Oh my God.
And essentially, it's quite a long email, but she shows us how this man called Eddie Harrison wrote a bad review of Paddington and knocked off the top spot. And then since then, across the internet have been like hundreds of people calling for his death.
Oh my God.
Oh no, Eddie Harrison.
Yeah.
You would hope that Paddington fans wouldn't be inherently violent people.
You would have thought so, would you?
They're not really listening to the messages.
Yes, that's a good point.
It's not really in Paddington's worldview to relentlessly and vengefully seek the cold-blooded death.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to say a few things. And I'm not going to attach any judgment to them, okay? No judgment. Mm-hmm. The bear, born and brought up in Peru, South American country. Mm-hmm. The bear speaks English.
Mm-hmm. With an English accent.
With an English accent. Mm-hmm. Comes to Britain, meets a British family who also all speak English, and and the story goes from there. So yeah, Paddington.
What are you doing?
Nothing. just saying some stuff about Paddington.
Just pointing out that fiction exists and that fun, fictive occurrences can exist.
Yeah. And people in Peru, maybe some people in Peru do speak English with an English accent.
That's not a problem with Paddington. That's not.
I'm not saying it's a problem. Who said it's a problem? Also, imagine if the station he'd arrived in was Bristol Temple Meads. Something to think about, isn't it?
Didcot Parkway, the bear.
That'd be a great... maybe that's what happens in Paddington 3, is that some more bear... like the bear gang arrive.
Gatwick.
Oh, yeah. Southampton Airport Parkway.
Have you met my friends? Gatwick, Luton.
RAF Bryce Norton.
And Launceston Request Stop.
Anyway, yeah, if you've got some big naysays,
yeah, I think send naysays. To be honest, let's face it, naysay is, I think I can say this, without too much controversy. It's quite a lot stronger as a format than our current show, isn't it?
Than Three Bean Salad.
Than Three Bean Salad, which is almost isn't a format. Whereas Naysaying is very... Have you watched Naysayers? Yeah, it's hosted by Claudia Winkleman and starring Claudia Winkleman. And the whole thing happens in this thing called the Winkleverse, which is a big set, which is Claudia Winkleman's face. Mm-hmm. And she sits in the middle of it.
It feels like that's overtaken the format a bit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Naysaying with Claudia Winkleman is a dog's breakfast. 2 stars, The Telegraph. Felt like a decent idea, but the Winkle face, the whole concept of the Winkleverse, the huge Claudia Winkleman's face, the set, it just felt like it distracted from the core idea, which actually wasn't bad.
So that's your emails.
Okay.
Is that it?
All right. Thanks, Ben.
Yeah, I do think naysaying is... I think we should ask people to send in their naysays and let's make a format of it.
Are there any parameters here, or it's just... Because you can't... Don't naysay things that... Like, you can't say, like, I don't know,
pestilence.
Things that people don't like already. It has to be the crown jewels, really.
Yeah, yeah. So it has to be things which are cultural crown jewels, national treasures.
They're on a pedestal, essentially.
Yeah.
Rich brews.
Mm. Rich brews.
It's a dark path.
It is. I mean, we might be opening a complete canister of darkness here.
Yeah, but let's see what the listeners think.
It will destroy us, ultimately. Mm.
Well, it could be something we could think about putting into the Three Bean Salad Dark Web edition, isn't it? It could work quite well in that format. Yeah.
Thanks to everyone who's signed up on our Patreon, patreon.com/threebeansalad.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And there are various tiers you can sign up for. You can get ad-free episodes. You get the bonus episodes, which we do every month, which are weighty and fantastic. And also, at the third tier, the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout-out in the Sean Bean Lounge, where Mike was last night.
Indeed.
And it was a relaxing one in the lounge, wasn't it, last night? Less frenetic than normal.
That's true. Unusually so.
Mm-hmm. Because it was the meditation with Dire Straits evening.
That is correct. Thank you, Ben. And here's my report. Heavy fuel of all kinds was left at the door last night for the Sean Bean Lounge Meditation with Dire Straits evening, which went wrong from the get-go as most participants found the presence of Dire Straits in the meditation suite immensely distracting. Drew James encouraged us to rise to the challenge by either concealing Dire Straits in polyester bicycle covers or by focusing our attention on a non-Dire Straits Knopfler. We elected to do both. Andrew Calder suggested focusing on the Australian stem cell biologist Paul Knopfler, but this drew an immediate complaint from Benji G, who couldn't stop thinking about the fact that Dire Straits' Brother in Arms tour ended in Australia at the Sydney Entertainment Centre and still holds the record for consecutive appearances in that venue at 21 nights. Christine Smythe muddied the headspace waters further by claiming that 21 was Mark Knopfler's age when he formed his first band, The Silverheels. Nathan Parker demanded this be fact-checked, but Jacob Rood had already vetoed phone usage at the session, so Michael O'Connell was called upon to lift the bicycle covers and ask Dire Straits directly, but broke the zip and snagged the tug strap, thus sealing them inside permanently. Neil Badger Donaldson recommended we not ask Dire Straits any biographical questions to allow them to conserve air, so Christine's assertion remained unverified. Jenny Whittle attempted to rekindle the session with a soothing mantra, but was interrupted by a cry from within the bicycle covers that she was in fact humming the organ part to Industrial Disease from the Love Over Gold album. Threats soon began emanating from the same source regarding copyright infringement and legal action, and in the end there was nothing for it but for Gregory Francis and Beth Speak to drag the bicycle covers, Dire Straits and all, into the Sean Bean Lounge Meditation Suite cleaning cupboard. Tempers were flaring by this point, and Tobias Jonsson's attempt to return us to meditation settings by proposing we all just chill out had the reverse effect. Sean Moger saved the day, however, by racing to his Hyundai i10 and fishing out a teach-yourself axe-throwing kit and a keg of strong Lithuanian lager, after which harmony was restored and the evening ended with everyone feeling centered and brimming with well-being. Thanks all.
So that's a lot. Let's just see whose version of our theme tune will play us out. We've got an email from Will, Will says, my daughter listens to bedtime story podcasts on my tablet, and every evening I fear that I'll forget to clear the queue beforehand and she'll be jolted awake from her peaceful slumber by the America jingle.
Ooh.
Anyway, I found a surprisingly good music box voice on her grandparents' keyboard and recorded this lullaby version of the theme.
Oh, nice. Thank you, Will.
So thank you, Will. It's a lullaby version of the theme. And sleep soundy, listeners.
Sleep well. Thank you very much. Happy New Year.
Oh, yeah. Enjoy the hootenanny.
Crack open a stollen cake for us. is it? Spiced fruits. Get all the fruits you've got. If you've left it late, it doesn't matter. You can have a great New Year's treat. Get all the fruits you've got in the house. Get them into a big pan. All the spices you've got. So cumin, turmeric, salt.
Chinese spice wise.
Fajita pouch.
a fajita pouch from next week's El Paso. You can fix that, cross that bridge when you come to it. But for now, make sure you've got all the spices, all the condiments, your ketchups, milk, and everything really on those fruits, and a slow boil. Well, either a slow boil for 7 hours or a rolling boil for four. And the house will be full of that festive,
that sweet
stink,
spicy, milky,
that sweet
stink.
Sweet,
that sweet stench.
And
bye.
Enjoy.
Bye.
Bye.